Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On News Talk.
Last night, President Donald Trump threatened a major new strike on Iran. Taking to Truth Social, Trump demanded that Iran come to the table to negotiate a fair and equitable deal, no nuclear weapons. He also warned that the next U.S. attack on that country will be far worse than the one it carried out last summer. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio faced a grilling from his former colleagues at a Senate hearing on the removal of Nicolas Maduro from Venezuela. And during that hearing, Republican Senator Rand Paul grilled Rubio on whether the Maduro capture was an act of war.
If a foreign country bombed our air defense missiles, captured and removed our president, and blockaded our country, would that be considered an act of war?
Well, I think your question is about the... And I will acknowledge you've been very consistent on all these points the entire career. So no matter who's in charge. So I will point to two things. The first is it's hard for us to conceive that an operation that lasted about 4.5 hours and was a law enforcement operation to capture someone we don't recognize as a head of state, indicted in the United States, wanted with a $50 million bounty.
My question would be, if it only took 4 hours to take our president, it's very short, nobody dies on the other side, nobody dies on our side, it's perfect. Would it be an act of war?
We just don't believe that this operation comes anywhere close to the constitutional definition of war.
But would it be an act of war if someone did it to us? Nobody dies, few casualties, they're in and out. Boom, it's a perfect military operation. Would that be an act of war? Of course it would be an act of war. I'm probably the most anti-war person in the Senate, and I would vote to declare war if someone invaded our country and took our president. So I think we need to at least acknowledge this is a one-way argument. One-way arguments that don't rebound, that you can't apply to yourselves, that cannot be universally applicable, are bad arguments.
Now, for more on this, on Venezuela, on Iran and domestic U.S. politics, I'm joined by Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway and columnist with the Journal.ie. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Pat. Great to be with you.
Now, first of all, let's talk about Iran and this armada that's sailing towards that benighted country. Do you think war is at hand or the risk of war has increased, or is this another great deflection?
Well, look, I think Venezuela changed the game in many respects on this front. We used to talk about Trump's bark and Trump's bite and distinguish between the two. I think now we know that he is willing to use the military. He has used the military strikes in Iran last year. And as he says, a massive armada is there. We know fighter planes are circling around the Middle East. So there's a significant presence there. Now we're also seeing that Iran is being quite defiant in terms of its response. So what Trump will do, as usual, is very, very hard to guess. But if he does act, there's lots of plausible scenarios that could emerge, not many of them very good, to be frank, either for the region or for the United States. And of course, there is the question whether this really all is saber rattling to distract from stuff at home.
Indeed, and he has difficulties at home, which we will talk about. But the question is, attacking Iran in this way, I mean, he went in and claimed it was a police operation in Venezuela, and we'll speak of that in a moment. But to go after the supreme leader of Iran, going in with some sort of SEAL force, that's not really on in a country like Iran. So if he decides to do remote military offensive like bombing, that is an act of war, and that really has to go through Congress.
One would think that the reality, and we've discussed this before, Pat, is that the Congress under successive administrations has really forfeited a lot of its constitutional role on this front. That is, presidents have been able to skirt the rules, as it were, and use military, at least on a limited basis, on numerous occasions. So, of course, there's the potential for limited strikes in Iran, but it's hard to avoid, you know, the conclusion that you reach. I do think that he's betting on his moral standing, or at least the public opinion in the United States, being somewhat bolstered by the fact that they're very well aware of what the Iranian regime has done to protesters, executing thousands of them. And that may give Trump a little bit of cover that he needs. At least that's his thinking.
Now, Marco Rubio yesterday was talking about how little the regime can do to address the problems it has, which are largely economic, and the depreciation of its currency dramatically. People are broke, people are hungry, there are shortages in pretty much every area of the economy. But you can trace these back to international sanctions, particularly by the United States, which followed on from the nuclear deal to which Obama was a signatory, being broken down by Trump.
Yeah, if you look at that nuclear deal, Pat, it's one of the rare American foreign policy good deeds or triumphs in recent times. And the fact that they walked away from it is tragic. And it shows that so much of what ails the Middle East, and indeed, some would say the wider world, stems from American interventionism. And I think a lot of Americans are fully aware of that. And that's one of the reasons why Donald Trump got a second term, was that he pledged he was going to avoid doing these sorts of things. And now, as we know, he's done very much in a about face, and America First has somehow morphed into expansionism.
Now, the question of how they would prosecute a war against Iran, I mean, he always pledges no American boots on the ground. He always wants proxies to do the dirty work. But at the same time, you know, running a war in the Middle East compared to maybe running a minor war in Venezuela, two very different kinds of campaigns and two very different sized adversaries.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's why I think the likelihood of full-scale war or combat is very unlikely. Boots on the ground is not going to happen. There's no question about that. You know, it's hard to guess what Donald Trump's going to do, but if there is the use of force, and there may not be, we can only hope and pray that there won't be. If there is, my suspicion is that it will be limited in a similar fashion to what happened last year. Now, of course, because Iran is Iran, that doesn't mean there won't be consequences. That doesn't mean there won't be severe fallout. For instance, some countries allied to the United States in the region could suffer attacks. Things could escalate. So once the genie is out of the bottle, anything is possible. And you're absolutely right to distinguish Iran from Venezuela.
Now, when we look at what happened in Venezuela, it looks like the Trump administration is happy to do deals with the fairly corrupt remnants of the Maduro regime. It turns out to be all about oil. I mean, they've taken Venezuelan oil and sold it already, and they're trying to get the American oil companies back in, as Trump put it, to claim what is rightly theirs, which is a bit bizarre. I mean, the Venezuelan people own the oil. There were some assets that were seized by the Maduro, by the Chavez regime. However, to decide that all of a country's natural resources belong to the United States is a bit of a stretch. So they are prepared to work with, you know, corrupted regimes.
Yeah, I mean, you could make a very strong case that this is actually theft. And one of the things that has been reported about the regime change, so-called, where actually we have the deputy of Maduro being installed as opposed to arguably the democratically elected leader, we're hearing from Marco Rubio and others that that would introduce an element of instability in the country, that there'll be looting and rioting and all sorts of unrest. But simultaneously, it has been reported that people close to Donald Trump, people with significant investments in Venezuela, have warned him off it for their own selfish interests. So I always think it's a little bit glib to say it all comes down to oil, but oil certainly is a very, very significant factor here.
But, you know, for people who watch the movies and think America is always the good guy, although there are many movies that suggest otherwise, you know, the idea that they will work with corrupt governments. And if, for example, the Revolutionary Guard in Iran stays in place with the decapitation of some of the leadership, is it likely that Rubio and his pals will work with them?
Yeah, it could. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, America has a track record of doing so. And that points to, you know, something we've discussed on numerous occasions, Pat, which is, in many respects, the folly of interventionism and the cynicism of interventionism, I think, in lots of instances where it's done in the name of democracy, but oftentimes it's done for much more nefarious reasons. And yes, the United States has done business with all sorts of people. And what they will do in the event of, you know, people being deposed, like Maduro, is they will say, look, this is a terrible, terrible person. Didn't our military do a wonderful job of deposing that individual, and hoping that that will be the end of the American people paying much attention as they move on to the next individual who may be every bit as nefarious and morally compromised as the first one.
Now, going back to domestic matters, and we saw what happened in Minneapolis, and we saw the removal of Bovino from his post. And I suppose Trump trying to calm the rumblings in the Republican Party. In terms of his almost about turn, what do you think is going on there? I mean, is ICE so discredited as a force that really it can no longer be deployed as, I suppose, spontaneously as Trump has done it over Democratic cities in the past?
Yeah, there's a lot of mixed messaging going on here from the president. It's actually not totally dissimilar to Greenland, where he said, we're not going to take Greenland, but still saying we need Greenland. So sending out very mixed messaging. Here in Minnesota, we've seen him say, you know, look, we want to de-escalate. You know, Bovino is gone. Evidently, the individuals involved with the killing of Mr. Preti have been put on leave. So there's all, and he's had a good, allegedly good phone call with Governor Tim Walz, who we all know he despises. But at the same time, you know, he has told Mayor Fry that you better enforce immigration law. You're playing with fire unless you do so. And all of this really, in my view, has to come down to, at some level, domestic politics, and the sense that a lot of Republicans, indeed, around the country are expressing deep unease with what has been done on the streets of Minneapolis, and also the poll numbers showing that an issue that he had a tremendous advantage on, one of the reasons he's president today, is immigration. He has forfeited that advantage by a grotesque overreach, which has resulted in multiple fatalities on the streets of America.
Now, Bovino's gone. Can Kristi Noem be far behind? Because she parroted exactly the same words. And yesterday, interestingly, she said she was only doing what she was ordered to do by Donald Trump.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to watch that space. He has said publicly that he's not going to get rid of her. And we've seen suggestions that perhaps she's going to go home to Dakota and stay quiet for a while. I think her reaction to both instances, to both horrific shootings in Minnesota, was very unhelpful for the administration as they tried to work their way through it. And I think she clearly opens herself up to the child of incompetence. Remember, this is a woman who at one stage looked like she might be chosen by Donald Trump to be his running mate. So I suspect strongly that in Republican circles, the perception which is growing is that she's in over her head. Whether Trump will respond to that in the near future, we shall see.
Now, what about Stephen Miller, who's seen by many as the architect of many of the policies that are expounded by Donald Trump, calls for him to go as well. I suspect that Trump won't let him go as readily as he might let Kristi Noem go, because I think he depends on Miller.
Oh, I think so. I think Miller, who, you know, again, is objectively speaking, I'm not even speaking from a partisan point of view, I think a malevolent individual with a malevolent worldview that most people in this country would find appalling. Yet he does have some decent political instincts when it comes to the base. And we know that when Donald Trump is in trouble, we know when he is feeling the pressure, he goes back to the base again and again and again for encouragement and try to ride out the storm. So both because I think he listens to Miller, he respects him, and because Miller speaks to the base and some of the elements that Trump appeals to, again, some pretty ugly stuff, I'd be very surprised to see Stephen Miller go anywhere.
Now, finally, we should talk about the U.S. economy. I mean, the dollar is weak, which means anything that's imported will be more expensive for the consumer. Now, Trump might say, yeah, but we make all stuff in America now. They can buy American and it won't affect them. But a weak dollar is not good for Uncle Sam.
No, in the grand scheme of things, no, it isn't. And, you know, look, to go beyond economics, and of course, the Federal Reserve rejected yet another interest rate cut yesterday, which I don't think Donald Trump will be best pleased with. But the realities on the ground haven't changed. And those are going to be crucial in the midterms, which are inflation and cost of living are still plaguing Americans. And the one worrying note that I would see in all of this is, despite the polling numbers in particular on the economy, Trump continues to say things that just don't comport with people's daily lives and daily experiences. And it makes me wonder, at the end of the day, does he actually care what happens in the midterms? Does he care a whit? And what we always counted on among American presidents was they would be restrained by, you know, what might happen to their party colleagues in elections. Does Donald Trump actually care? I think that's an open question at this point.
And lastly, I suppose, flooding the zone, and he certainly floods the zone every day, whether it's Venezuela, now Iran, we had the Greenland episode at Davos, and of course, the Minneapolis, which I don't think he necessarily planned would end the way it did with the death of two white American citizens. But this means that Epstein is squeezed out. Now, Epstein will not go away. It'll come back. So is he going to be making mischief for the rest of his term to avoid Epstein?
That could well be the case. And again, I think Democrats have a very potent line of questioning when they keep saying, you know, if there's nothing to see here, why not release all of it? And why create multiple storms internationally and domestically in a desperate attempt to divert attention away from it? That has to be part of the Democrats' messaging, as well as cost of living inflation, as well as avoiding the adventurism and expansionist agenda abroad. That has to be part of the messaging for ahead of the midterm elections, in which, again, they should, by all accounts, fare very well. But we'll see on that front.
If this is a deflection, there must be some terrible stuff in the files that he will go to these lengths to avoid it. Anyway, Larry Donnelly, a law lecturer at the University of Galway, columnist with thejournal.ie. Larry, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile. And you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.